Welcome to Pleasant Ridge Today. This is David Levin. Robin is off today, social distancing. Have a special episode for you. So, recording this Monday, March 16th, 2020, first official day of school being closed. Interesting times. Oh my goodness. And of course, it's so disruptive for our kids and ourselves in many ways. And it's likely to continue for a while. So, you know, we're looking for ways to keep things feeling as normal and connected as possible. So one idea that came up is that Kim John Payne, author of Simplicity Parenting and friend of Pleasant Ridge, released a special 5-part audio series this week to help parents better deal with all that's going on. And we thought that would probably be helpful to our community. So we asked Kim and he agreed to let us repost it here on Pleasant Ridge Today. So that's what you're about to hear. This is episode 1 of that series, and episodes 2 through 5 will follow shortly. If you're not already on Kim's newsletter list, this would be a great time to join. He has several other ideas in the works to help during this period. Be good to subscribe to his podcast, too, if you're interested. I'm guessing that most of what he puts out will be on audio. You can join Kim's list at simplicityparenting.com. There's a link on that page also to the podcast where you can subscribe, or you can just search in your player for the Simplicity Parenting podcast. We hope you enjoy this special series. If you know other parents you think it would help, feel free to share it with them as well. It's free and open to everyone. And if you get a minute, pop over to Kim's Facebook page and thank him for letting us share this with you. It was awfully generous of him. Just go to Facebook and search on Simplicity Parenting and say thanks. All right, enjoy, stay safe, and Robin and I will be back soon with updates as we hear about plans from the school going forward.
Welcome back to the Simplicity Diaries with me, Kim John Payne. This week, there seems really an obvious call to be talking about events around the world to do with this coronavirus that is causing us as parents to really pause. And things are changing now, and they'll be changing, looks likely, more and more over the coming weeks and maybe even months ahead. Today, what I wanted to talk about is preparing kids for this. I mean, they're seeing it in the news, obviously. They're hearing about it. And there's two aspects to this. And I wanted to talk about these two aspects of preparation in this podcast, and then be able to talk more in coming series with the whole question of, so how do we handle more and more and more time at home with our kids? Because for many of us, that looks likely that that's going to be coming up with school closings. Now, handling that time at home with our kids and having them also be able to handle it is going to take a little preparation. Right now, the school closings are starting. By the time you listen to this podcast, there might be more schools closed. And the predictions are that that's going to be happening quite a bit. So preparing kids for this is going to be very important. Now, one aspect of preparing our children for this is on the emotional side, the psychological side. There's been good information circulating around that. From Simplicity Parenting, from this kind of lens, there's a few things that can be done in preparing them for this. And one is to assure our children that good people are working on this, that doctors and nurses and lots of people who work in hospitals and clinics are you know, working very, very hard on this. And that they know what they're doing. They are trained in this, and that they're getting ready, and they're taking good care of anyone who gets sick. that that's what these people do, and they do it so well. And for younger children in particular who might be picking up on this, it's an important piece to let them know, to give them, you know, honest evaluation of the situation, to say, yeah, there is a flu at the moment, and oh gosh, it does make us feel awful when we get the flu. We get, and even a little bit of information about their bodies, you know, we get a cough, and oh, all our legs get achy, and maybe even a headache, and we just and let them know that you've had that before, that because most people have had a flu, and to say, you know, oh yeah, mummy has had a flu before. And if it's an older kid, you might say, yeah, and you've had the flu before too. And we get the right treatment, we take good care of ourselves, and we come through. Now, they'll hear that, of course, that some people have died. And to say to them, yep, that's quite right. People die of all different kinds of things. And it really does depend on the age of the child, how you pitch this. But yeah, that's actually true, love. But at the moment, the people who get really sick with this is not young people like you. You are pretty sure that if you did get a little bit of a flu, you would get over it pretty quickly, and you'd be fine after that. And that we'll make sure that even if one of us does get the flu, we go and see those good and kind people, and they will make sure that we'll be okay. And to give that kind of information, I don't think it's fudging the truth because of the way this virus is affecting certain age groups. And to give them that message, I think is important. Some people I've been speaking to, and I've been speaking to a lot of parents who have been calling in this week and last week about how to speak to their kids. The question has come up about older people, because some kids are getting the information that this is really affecting older folk. And the question comes up, is grandpa going to die? And that's sort of that question is a classic question, particularly for a child between about the age of sort of 5, 6 up until about 8, 9, 10. That question will come up a lot. It will come up with younger ones, but that's unlikely. But certainly older ones might pose that question, but in a more informed way. Those kids in the middle age group, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, they have a strong sense, particularly around 8, 9, they have a strong sense of mortality that starts now. They start becoming aware that people, you know, die, and that that life has a cycle. And to be able to say to them, you know, Nana and Grandpa are being very careful. They are at home. They are careful of who they're seeing. They're doing all the things that the people who know about this stuff are telling them to do. And if they do that, then the chances of them being very, very safe are pretty good. I think that they're doing everything right. And to be able to, and some kids may even ask what that is, and you can, you know, give them the protocols that we're all hearing so much about, but to really let them know that Nana and Grandpa are being smart, that they've really got all the information they need, and that they're taking good care of themselves, and that they have people around them who are also know what they're doing. And even if they were to get sick, they have people who will help them stay well. That's not denying the danger of this, but it's giving the children actually the truth. All of that will be true. The other aspect of talking to children or being with children in this crisis, really, is not so much to do with them, but to do with ourselves. One of the things that some parents have been saying to me is that they're limiting their exposure, their own exposure as adults to the news media to one or two times a day. And I've been really impressed with parents who have got onto this, because the way in which the brain works is that if we hear a newscast telling us something a little bit scary or quite scary, the brain will, of course, as we know, excrete a hormone, hormones, a cocktail that largely sort of fire our fight or flight, freeze, or I would add flock to that. The amygdala response, that primal ancient survival brain. And as parents, I think it's even more likely that causes us anxiety, because we're protecting our kids, you know, and so our instinct to provide, protect is very strong as a parent. Very strong. So we're easily triggered into anxiety. That cocktail, that hormonal cocktail that gets released when we hear a report, is much more easily released. Fact is, though, if we hear almost an identical report half an hour later on this sort of slightly breathless news, a way of reading the news, that hormone will release again, even though it's the same report. And then we'll hear it again half an hour later. It may have changed just a little bit to capture our attention, and it happens over and over. And we our anxiety levels start to rise and rise and rise. And our kids, particularly when they're hearing this kind of news around them, you know, even though we might not be exposing them to that, we'll talk about that in a moment, but they are going to pick up on it, and they need us to be able to co-regulate. They need us to be able to be as calm and as centered as we possibly can be. It was in a lecture that I was giving years ago out on the West Coast in the United States, where I worked with a gentleman called Joseph Chilton Pierce. And I've mentioned this analogy once before in one of the much earlier podcasts, where he said something quite striking. He said that if you take a cell out of a live heart and put it in a certain solution and look at it under a microscope, the heart cell will keep beating at the same pace, but sooner or later will start to fibrillate and then expire. However, if you take a cell from a completely different heart and place it proximal, you know, nearby that fibrillating, that expiring heart cell, the fibrillating cell will actually recover and start beating again, and the two will beat in unison. That was really a beautiful, not just metaphor, but reality, that so explained for me co-regulation. That when our children are nervous and a little anxious, and what's going on, and our school is closed, and life has shifted and changed, can we as much as possible come alongside them with a steady beating heart, with a steady beating presence, so that they can then co-regulate with us and have their hearts, their emotions, their sense of security and safety increased, and that feeling of okay, this is a bit weird, but all it's okay. All is well. I'm going to be fine. We're going to get through this. So that they don't go into fight or flight themselves. What's really important about this, And I was mentioning this just yesterday to one of the many interviews I've been doing. My phone has been ringing quite a lot lately with requests for interviews from various magazines and newspapers about this very subject, is that one of the points I think is crucial, and perhaps one of the major points of this podcast, is that if we can secure our children in this way and stay as regulated as we can, then their behavior while they're at home will be much easier to guide. They won't be on an adrenaline, cortisol-fueled, anxiety-driven behavioral bend. They won't be pushing back against us. They won't be refusing to do stuff. They won't, because we're going to be spending a lot of time with them. Chances are, for many of us, we're going to be spending a lot of time with our kids coming up. And if we're going to be spending that amount of time with them, we can use that time to co-regulate. We can even go one step further, and the silver lining in this tragedy, and let's not forget, it's such a tragedy for the people who have died as a result of this, of course. But the silver lining in it is that it offers us a chance to really connect on a deeper way with our children. It offers us this chance to move in close, to regulate our own emotions, to really dial back the amount of screens that and the amount of radio that we're listening to about this. Of course, we've got to stay informed, but once or twice a day, that's kind of it. And this offers us a chance to get closer to our children, to connect with them. And in that way, you know, we're really able to come out of this when it passes, as indeed it will. When it passes, we'll come out of it just like, in a way, and I was describing this to one of the people who I was doing this interview with, is that when you've been sick and when you have a fever, when a child has a fever, very often they, you know, they'll fight off the fever, and gosh, it's hard, but they'll come out of the fever on the other side almost like having grown, developed 6 to 12 months. They are much stronger. Now, I don't mean to relate that to the coronavirus and the fever for children. I mean that as a metaphor, that when something hard has happened but it's been well handled, one can come out of it stronger. And what I'm suggesting is that this very difficult time, just like a fever is difficult, this very difficult time that we're in right now, if we move in close to our children, connect with them, be able to be with them, and use this time to deepen that connection, when in the coming weeks and months this begins to fade and life resumes as normal, we may well have a much deeper connection with our child. One parent said to me that in terms of their own emotional regulation, that they're trying not only very hard to have less radio, less TV, they want to stay informed, but she was very practical about it. She actually said she is getting her news, of course, away from the children, but in the morning. And she's avoiding any newscasts or anything remotely to do with media in the run-up to her own bedtime. And she also said she's increasing the amount of what she's doing that feeds her, that gives her a feeling of groundedness. Now, for this young mum, it was exercising, working out, and doing yoga at home. All of this was happening at home because her school had already closed. And she was using the time she was spending at home to actually be able to do the things that calm and center her more. I've mentioned this to a number of parents over the last week or two, And some of them have said other things like, yep, I've got more time at home, so I'm going to get that pantry sorted out. I'm going to sort out the cupboards. I'm going to sort out the basement. That was one mum's. I'm going to do a simplification of the house. I've been meaning to do this. Well, actually, she said I did it some time ago and now I need to do it again. As we know, you know, it all sort of creeps up on us. But she was going to use this as a way to do a simplification regime. Excuse me. Another dad, he talked about just doing more reading, that he loved to read, and he was going to be doing that. He was going to be doing more reading out loud with his children and had that already planned. Another mum actually said to me that she's planning and doing more artwork and plans on doing it more, that that's one of the things she loves to do. And last on my list, because I made a list of all these things parents were telling me, is that one mum said she's going to do a lot more journaling. And I suggested, oh gosh, well, another mum said to me that she's not going to be listening to media of a nighttime, only in the morning to get informed and then setting that aside. And this other mum was grateful for that. She said, perfect. I could do the same, but I could journal in the evenings. Rather than listening into the media and getting scared, I'm going to journal about all the things that I've been meaning to write down for a long time. I was so pleased to hear so many parents get onto this need for our own regulation and what will regulate us. It could be for you, it could be very different for you. It could be getting baking, you know, and doing, if you love to do that, cooking, baking, any number of different things will work. And what's particularly of benefit for this is that when we do that, we calm our own nervous systems down. We really do, on a body-based way, but also an emotional way. We calm things down, and that's going to become increasingly important for our children. So it's not only really about them and the information that they're hearing. It's, I feel, as much if not more, this is to do with what we can do with self-care, eating well, getting enough sleep, doing the things we enjoy to do that nourish us, that will enable us to moor our emotional canoe right alongside our child's and say, I've got you. I'm with you. You're safe here. You're okay here. In next week's podcast, we'll be talking more about what to do when our children are going to be home. Many of them are going to be home a lot more. Okay. I sure hope this was helpful. Bye-bye now.